One of the questions, the popular questions, this week, you know, this year is very rare. We have over here only one parasha. Parashas Tazria, and what's even more rare, Metzora, but what's even more rare is that there's nothing going on. Even when you split that, first of all, it's weird that they're split. And then even if they're not split, if I'm not mistaken, usually if it's split, one of them is going to be one of the Dalal Parashios. Right? That's usually the way it is. It usually turns out that it's either Rosh Chodesh, or it's one of the, or it could be Rosh Chodesh, Nisan, maybe. I think it can happen. It can be Moch Chodesh, or it can be Rosh Chodesh, or it can be one of the Dalad. If it's Rosh Chodesh, or Moch Chodesh, or Bishah, or Parashas HaChodesh, this year, it's just a regular Parasha. It's not Moch Chodesh, it's not Rosh Chodesh, it's not Parashas HaChodesh. What? It can't be what? That's in a regular year, when it's Tazria Mitzora. Even when it's not a double parasha, and it's a single parasha. After Pesach? Nishtahi Nishtaher. Usually Tazria Mitzora are connected. And that's when it's after Pesach. And what after do you lay in? You lay in Mitzora, not Tazria. What I'm really referring to, Rabbi Yisai, is the Haftorah. The Haftorah is a very, we lay in this week, the Haftorah of Parashas Tazria. It is very, very rare to lay in this Haftorah. For the Balei Kriya who lay in from Klaf, it's not a party this week. It's a long Haftorah, and the words are not easy words. They're very, very interesting. A lot of nuances. Okay, there are a lot of nuances. It's a real tongue twister. This week's parasha, it's not so common to lay the Haftarah, which the Haftarah just is an indication that it's just a regular week. There's nothing as a regular week, but generally, usually, Tazria, Mitzora go together. And when they don't go together, and it's Tazria one week, and like in a leap year, usually, Parashas Tazria is Parashas HaChodesh, and you lay in a special Haftarah. And fine, let's leave it with that. So Baruch Hashem, we have time over here to dwell upon just this parasha. First question, what is the significance of the juxtaposition of Tazria to Parasha Shmini? The major bulk of the half Parasha Shmini is devoted to Macholois Asuris. You're not allowed to eat non-kosher animals. You have to have the two simonim, fish, spins and scales. And when it comes to the shirotzim, kol holich al gochoin, and the parish, the last part, lahavdil, the last pasuk is, the last part, zois toiras habehema, v'chol oif, v'chol nefesh achaya, harameses v'amoyim, u'l'chol nefesh ha-shiretzes al-oretz, lahavdil, bein ha-tameo, bein ha-tuhor, u'vein ha-chaya, ha-ne'echeles, u'vein ha-chaya, asher lo se'ochel. Vaidaber Hashem Shalemar, Daber Bene Yisholemar, Ishoki Sazria. We always the Dorshir Shimois. They always like to say, what is the significance and the connection between the two parashios, between the end of one parasha and the beginning of another parasha? So I would like to suggest you a very simple answer. This parasha begins really with creation. Now this after it's Chodesh Nisan. Chodesh Nisan is the anniversary of Ma'aseh Bereishis. And we learn about Ishoki Sazria, the Yolada Zohar, she gives birth to a male child, Vitama'ah Shivas Yamim. And then it goes on to say that she has to bring a set of Kurbanos, an elaborate set of Kurbanos, if she can afford one set, if she can afford another set of Kurbanos. Why? Just because a woman gives birth to a child, it's a natural event. It's a natural event of life for a woman to give birth to a child. Why does she have to bring a set of korbanos for the birth of every child? Generally, in the Torah, you only bring korbanos for unnatural events. Someone does an avera, a special circumstance. But when you wake up in the morning, you don't bring a korban, an individual. Why are you bringing over here a set of korbanos for what would appear to be a natural event? So Rashi or Chazal really tell us is because when a woman gives birth, she is in a lot of pain. And when she is in pain, she makes a shavua, at least in her mind, she will have nothing to do with the person that caused her to feel this pain. I will have nothing to do with the person who is responsible for this situation, that being her husband, and she's done with him. She is done with him. And later she asks Harata. So because these thoughts go through her mind and whatever this means, therefore she needs atonement for the trauma or the sins that she has expressed due to the trauma that she has suffered. Now that begs the question, why did she suffer trauma in childbirth that triggered her to behave in such a way and take a shavua and have nothing to do with the person responsible for this? Oh, we have no choice to go back to Maisa Bereishis, the chait of the Eitz Hadas. The chait of the Eitz Hadas, Hashem told Adam and Chava, you can have anything you want except one thing. Don't eat from the Eitz Hadas. And she disobeyed, she ate from the Eitz Hadas. We all know the story. And the end of the story was Hashem issued 10 curses. There are 10 curses that resulted from the Chet Eitz Hadas. And one of them, which is the most noticeable, is that when a woman has a child, Be'etzev Tel Dibonim, childbirth will be a painful experience. That was the curse. One of the 10 curses, it will no longer be a pain-free experience. Process, it will be mikanu laba, every woman in this world that will give birth to a child will suffer. That was one of the 10 curses Hashem brought upon this world. It's an amazing thing, because it doesn't make sense. Hashem should make a world where people suffer, and not only should they suffer, it's just that's how it has to be. It's a natural reality. That doesn't make sense. Hashem would never create a world and the purpose and it should be natural to suffer. It can't be. It's not the natural thing. It is not natural for a woman to suffer in childbirth. It's only because of the chet Eitz Hadas. 10 curses were given to this world. Be'etzev tel dibonim. So here we are. And you know what the consequence of that is? A woman gives birth and she goes through this trauma and she acts out and she takes a shavua. I will have nothing to do with this man who caused me this pain, v'chulu, 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 and she behaves in a way, the thoughts that go through her mind are not proper, and that is why she needs atonement for her sins. She has to bring a set of korbanos, a chatos, and an oila every time she gives birth. That is the answer to our question. Our question was, why is this sugya of Yishaki Sazri, a few little psukim? Most of the parasha is about tsaras, and we have a little section that begins with childbirth. What's it doing here? Teretz, this really belongs, I don't know why it's not, to parasha Shmini. The macholos ha'asuros, as if to say, Hashem is giving us a polite reminder. I gave you a large collection of laws of kosher food and non-kosher food. You know what that reminds us of? The Chet Eitz Hadas. I gave you a world, and in this world, you can eat whatever you want. Go into the pomegranate, go into Glatmart, go into Moishe's, go into your favorite store, supermarket, go into ShopRite. You can eat whatever you want in this world. But there are a few things I don't want you to eat. I don't want you to eat fish that don't have fins and scales, animals that are not, don't have the two simonim, and the birds that have the simonim. I don't want a few things. There's plenty of food out there to eat. There's a very big industry. Kosher food industry is a big industry. But there are things. So what will happen? A person, it can very can say to himself, all right, listen, you know what Hashem told me, it's just a recommendation. There are no consequences. It's just a recommendation, don't eat non-kosher. You walk into the supermarket, come on, it has the FDA, the FDA approval, there's a government, would the government ever do anything to harm you? Would the government ever want to harm you? If it's good in the government, they go to the slaughterhouse in Pennsylvania, with the Empire, so they have there, there's a whole station of the FDA. Okay, the FDA, they're there, they're watching, they're inspecting the birds to make sure that everything is kosher v'yosher. There's no problems.
How do you differentiate between a Sephardi bird and an Ashkenazi bird?
I have no idea. So a person can be one joke, the whole shiur unravels. Let's with one joke, please. Let's try to keep just for a few moments. A person can be misled to believe that when the Torah tells us don't eat non-kosher, it's just a polite recommendation. It's not a requirement. And even if it's a requirement, it's a big deal, big deal. So I ate. What do you expect? A person has a tivus achila, good food. What's the big deal? I went into the non-kosher restaurant. I drive by McDonald's every day, so you see there's a drive. What's the big deal? The Torah immediately, politely reminds us. There was a person in this world that I told her she could eat whatever she wants except one tree, the Eitz Hadas. And you know what happened? She didn't listen. And you know what the consequences were? A world of suffering. Be'etzef tel dibonim. And that's why every woman has to bring korbanos. Therefore, remember that. Remember, this is nothing. When I'm giving you laws of kosher or non-kosher food consumption, take it seriously. Because there was a person back in the day that was also given laws of what to eat and what not to eat. Mikol eitz hagan. Just don't need this. And that person didn't take it so seriously. It was, they just viewed it as a recommendation. But if I, Hashem, I need to eat the non-kosher also. And you know what happened to that person? A world of suffering came into existence. 10 curses. And the top of the list is Be'etzev tel dibonim. So I'm warning you now. All of the laws of eating kosher and non-kosher, you better take seriously. Because if you disobey and you become nichshol in macholos or asurais, there are consequences. Big consequences. This Parshas Tazria is a juxtaposed to the laws of the macholos asurais as a polite reminder, watch out. Don't take this lightly. And in fact, Chazal tell us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu protects the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he protects tzaddikim from doing averos. And then the Gemara goes on and says, really? I'll show you many tzaddikim that did pretty serious stuff. And the Gemara at the end says, eating is different. Because when you eat something, when you ingest non-kosher, it becomes part of your basar v'dam, it affects your nesham in a way that other averos do not affect. It becomes part of your essence. Eating is different. Eating, there's an element, we see this in society. There are people that are Yirei Shamayim. It's a big thing. Food is a very serious thing. And the consequences, we don't know how it works. Hashem did not reveal to us the punishment and the reward of mitzvahs, so we have no idea. But here, there is definitely a polite reminder. It is not a coincidence that the laws of a woman giving birth and the requirement that she bring korbanos only because of the tsar, the trauma, be'etzev tel dibonim, triggered in her to make a shavua, consciously, subconsciously, b'dibur, shaloi b'dibur, but the tsar leida is what triggered the requirements of bringing these korbanos. And why was there tsar leida? Because she ate what she was not supposed to eat. Therefore, you should remember that half the parasha shul you just came away from last week, you better take it seriously. This is not a small matter. Okay, let's go to the next vart. Next vart. Now, I think this vart is something that only we would pay attention to in this generation. If you unfortunately waste time listening to the news and you hear crazy things go on in this world, and it awakens us. Everyone is joking. The Supreme Court nominee, Justice Brown, was asked, this will go down in the world history, is what is a woman? What is a woman? And I don't even remember, I, What happened again yesterday? Yeah.
When another official was asked that question.
And what did they answer? Okay, so something which is like in Aleph Beis, we live in a world that you have to scratch your head what's going on in this world. What is a woman? What is a woman? What is a man? So it's very interesting. In this week's parasha, begins. She gives birth to a zohar. Fine. Okay, it goes on. It tells us all of the laws, and then it goes on. V'im nikeva seleid. Oh, there's a nikeva. There's something called a zohar, a male and a female. Wow, look at that. Then. So, what is a zohar? What is a nekeva? Does the Torah define it? Does the Torah define what they are? Doesn't define what they are. And then it goes on and it says, the next pasuk vav, uvim lois yimei Torah. She's tamei for 7 and tar for 33, or 14 and 66. A woman gives birth to a male. She's tamei for 7 days. So zohar tamei for 7 days. After 7 days, there are 33 days of Tahara. A female, she's Tamei for 14 days. And then there are 66 days of Tahara. And then, when all of that is over, you gotta bring Korbanos. Now, if you were writing the Torah, what would you write? Uvim lois yimei Tahara lizochar ole nekeva. Be consistent. Right? Be consistent. Isha ki sazria v'yoldo zochar. Or v'im nekeva seleid.
You mean you want the procedures to be equal?
No, the Torah tells. I'm talking about the vocabulary. I'm talking about the vocabulary should be consistent. It says in the pasuk. The pasuk says uvim lois yimei tara levain oy levas. Why now did the Torah call this creature, call them a vein or a bas? That's not the way the Torah referred to these genders. The gender was Zohar or Nekeva. That's not my question, but for all the farshim, this is a question. You start off, not all, but some of the farshim, this is a question. You start off, Isha ki sazria v'yolada Zohar. It's a boy. It's a boy. Doctors, you should know, they're not allowed to say that anymore. They're not allowed to say, someone told me they gave birth, so I heard this secondhand. Gave birth, and the woman, very hard labor.
Oh, yeah.
And then she asked the doctor, the baby was crying, blah, 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 you know, wah, wah, wah. And she said to the doctor, what is it, a boy or a girl?
Child.
What is it?
No.
And the doctor picked up the baby. She couldn't see. She couldn't really see. Picked up the baby and ran away. Put the baby, gave it to the nurse and ran away. And she was terrified. She thought there was something wrong with the baby. And then she found the baby's birth, a healthy baby. Idiot. I asked you, is it a boy or a girl? I'm paying you a lot of money. Is it a boy or a girl? We're now on a new policy in the hospital. The baby has to identify itself. It's not a joke. It's not a joke. The baby has to identify. He has to identify. Does he identify as a male or a female? You're not allowed to say. You hear what goes on today? What goes on today? The mother was terrified. She thought the baby was a... This is unbelievable what goes on in this world. Okay?
The birth certificate?
I don't know. Rabbi Sayyid, it says here, a baby is born, the older Zohar... We have to go right there. A baby is born, it says in the Torah, Zohar Oy Nekeva.
That's what's born.
And then
if
it.
She has that child.
Yeah. So why doesn't
then
the.
Then she has a bain or a.
Wait a minute.
Then she has a connection with the baby. She feels for the baby. She has a charata.
He's saying drush. He's saying good. Very good. But okay. But isn't it a good kasha? Appreciate the question. Uvimlos yimei tohara. Levein oy levas. It should say la zohar o la nekeva. Try laning tomorrow. La zohar ol nekeva, it'll shout you down, right? It says in the pasuk, why did the Torah change from zohar to nekeva to bein or bas? What is the difference between? I want to suggest this, something similar to what you're saying. Similar. What is the difference between the taich of a zohar nekeva versus a bein or a bas? Relationships. You really just said it. A relationship. A zachar and a keva is an object. You're an object. A cheftza. A cheftza. A bein or a bas is a relationship. In a relationship, there is a two-way relationship. A bein means you're a child. Oh, you're a child? You're my child? I have responsibilities. I have to support you until you're 6 years old and then get a job, according to the Torah. Not until you're 60. We added a zero. I have to support you until you're 6 years. I have obligations. Oh, you're a bein? You have obligations to me. Kabeda savicha v'yasimecha. A bas as well. And guess what? The obligations that you have to a son are not the obligations you have to a daughter. And the obligations you have to a daughter, the Gemara says, kol hamalami, okay, don't get insulted, kol hamalami is bitoi Torah, ki'ilu melamda tiflas. Whatever that means, it means. There's a different Mishnah in the Masechta Kedushin. What are your obligations to your son, to your, are you mechuyev? I don't know all the differences, but you go through the Shulchan Aruch, go through the Rambam, go through the Shas, and you will discover that the obligations a parent has to a son are not the same he has to a daughter. The obligations he has to a daughter are not the same you have to a son. The obligations a son has to his parents are not the same what a daughter has to her parents. A daughter gets married, she doesn't have obligations anymore to her parents. Her first obligation, not doesn't have, but her first obligation is to her husband. Heshi, just leave it. Heshi, leave. Don't bend down. Just leave it. Heshi, just leave it. Okay? Don't worry about it. Leave it. Don't worry. Just leave it there. Don't worry about it. Fine. It's fine. Okay? The obligations, don't bend down. Leave it. The obligations a person has to his son and daughter. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Don't get worked up over it. The obligations someone has, they're not the same obligations. So I'm trying now to take this idea. That doesn't answer the question. It just makes the question even greater. What's going on over here? So based upon, you know, every generation automatically forces us to, enlightens us to see the Chochmah Satar. Okay, for generations, there's never a generation, at least in our time, as far as we know, maybe there were previous generations that were obsessed with these crazy things, but in our generation, you know, everything forced you to go back to the Torah, ha-feuch-ba, de-kul-ba, and to say a machshava drush, is that the Torah here is coming to define what is a zohar, what is a nekeva, what is a woman, what is a nekeva, what is the Torah's response, what is the Torah's response to what is defined for me a male, define a female. I know the Torah's response is, a male is a son. A female is a daughter. That's the Torah's response. Obligations. You know, the whole gender identity, it's all about, you know what it's all about? Entitlement. How I identify. And all of you people out there, you bow down to me. You know what a bein and a bas means? Duty, obligation, responsibility to somebody else. The word bein means, I have an obligation to my father. The word bein means a father has an obligation. The whole identity crisis today is all about, I have no obligations to anyone. I'm a selfish, good-for-nothing zero. It's all about me. I identify as this. And if all of you guys out there, you better respect me and bow down to me and worship me, because it's all about me. The word bein and the word bas automatically mean I have responsibilities. And there are people out there who have responsibilities to me as well in a very select way. A zohar is born. You know what that means? This is a bein. Mitzvahs ha-bein al ha'av. The father now has to do a pidyon ha-ben, has to do a bris milah, not in that order. and the father has an obligation to teach him Torah. There's no pidyon ha-ben for a girl. There's no bris milah for a girl. There's no obligation to teach a girl Torah. And if you have a girl, you have a bas, you have to go marry her off. and you have to do other other things. And if you're a boy, you're a baby, you have responsibilities to your father. Even if you get married, if you're a girl, then the responsibility of your parents becomes second to your husband. Responsibility. Oh, once you start talking about responsibility, believe me, you have no time to get involved in the mishigas of what goes on in this world today. You're not busy the whole day trying to figure out which bathroom you go into. When you start off, a zohar and a keva, zohar and a keva, what am I? What am I? All about me. And you know where that takes you? Takes you down a path, you're busy the whole day with crazy mishigasim. But when the Torah tells you, a zohar, you're a bane. You have obligations. When the frame of mind is what is your responsibilities to other people, you relay, it doesn't germinate crazy nonsense that has no logical sense in this world. The Torah was brilliant. Brilliant in addressing the 21st century. Isha ki sazria v'yolda zohar. Now, what is a zocha? What is a nekeva? Pasuk tells you, uvim lois himei tohara levein oilavas. That's the answer. This is a son. This is a daughter. Oh, that's a whole new world. I have a child. I have responsibilities. The Torah is nipping in the bud. It's not about you. It's about your responsibilities. It doesn't even allow a moment of time to enter to become a meshugana in dealing with these crazy thoughts. Because the Torah is telling you it's not about you. It's about someone else. It's about responsibility. Okay, let's go to another idea. One of the most popular questions, discussions over here, and this is a... this is a big topic. Okay, no, I'd rather not do that for now. Let's do something a little bit, okay, something along the same lines of what I was thinking. There is a woman who is wealthy and a woman who is not. The Torah breaks up the korbanos, differentiates between the rich and the poor. Okay, the rich and the poor just goes to show the Torah is not a communist system. Because it was communism, there would only be the poor. The Torah says, if you're rich, you bring an animal. The woman brings for the carbon chatas you bring a seh. Okay, what does it say? It says, what does it say over here? You bring for keves, a sheep, ben shenoso le'oila. Okay, the oila will be an animal. And the chatos is a bird. And then it goes on to say, V'im lois simso yodo de se. She can't afford a se. Then she brings two birds. The oila will also be a bird. Okay. Question. The question is, there are many questions, there will be a lot of questions in this time, but one of the questions is, why is it that when a woman is wealthy, she's rich, and she could afford to bring her oila, an animal, a seh, impressive, wow, you're a gevira. I'm not going to go measure. There was once a certain celebrity, not that long ago, they had a baby, big celebrity in society, okay, big celebrity, and she had a baby, and then, of course, she came out to make a press conference to announce the name of the baby, to show off the baby. And the media was all over. What was she wearing? You know, it's like you think, you know, a woman overcoming in the hospital, they're still in the hospital, she's wearing a hospital gown, which cost 10 cents, whatever. They charge the insurance company $100, but it only cost only 10 cents. And she was wearing, you know how much what she was wearing? $5,000. Wow, she had the das. But when she went in to have the baby, she already brought a whole wardrobe there. A whole wardrobe over there. So then when she makes her public announcement, she should be wearing clothing that most people can't afford. Most people can't even begin to afford, right? So So over here you have a woman, wow, you come to the Beis HaMikdash with an animal. You walk into the Beis HaMikdash with an animal, everyone's taking pictures. Oh, this woman, all the collectors. Who are they going to go to? On Purim, where do they go to, the collectors? All the nice houses. They don't go to the Shracha houses, so they only go to the women who come and bring animals, because they're rich. They don't go to ask the women who bring birds, because they're not going to get a donation from them. So it says, she brings the animal. The Kohen will offer it. The Kohen hikrivo, he will bring it, and she will become tahar. She'll have atonement. Now jump down. Let's say she's poor. She takes birds. And now you know what it says. Why is it that with regard to the poor woman, the pasuk says, but with regard to the rich woman, it says, he will bring atonement for her. Upon her, v'chiper olecha. Why is the word Kohen omitted from her atonement only by the rich and famous, but by the poor and destitute? It says v'chiper olecha ha Kohen, not just Kohen, v'chiper olecha. Okay, you have to go together, ha Kohen, the rules of grammar. Why? Why does the word HaKohen appear by the poor woman and the word HaKohen does not appear by the rich woman in regard to her atonement? This is not my question, as someone I saw this question, but I would like to suggest an answer, very simple answer. It's so simple, but yet it's very meaningful and very relevant. When it says HaKohen, that obviously has a connotation that is a personal touch in her atonement. Ain't it done? You go to the Beis HaMikdash, get a ticket. Okay, can you imagine the Beis HaMikdash? Okay, you're coming over here, you know, there's a kiosk. A kiosk, you go to the airport. Remember the olden days? You go to Eretz Yisrael, I haven't gone in a long time, but you go there, there's no kiosk to get out of the airport. They interrogate you. You wait online forever, and finally, you come there to the desk there, and they ask you, what are you here for? Why do you come to Israel? Who you come for, who's your relative, where you're staying, what you're doing over here, how long are you going to be here? They interrogate you for fun. They interrogate you. I remember the first time I went to Eretz Yisrael, when I was a little kid, it looked like this mamish child interrogating me. The kid, whoever was interrogating me, looked like they were mamish, like 10 years old. And they were surrounded on two sides, two soldiers with machine guns. Remember those days? When you come to Eretz Yisrael, you go through customs. Before customs, you go through, you have to first get in. There's a person sitting in the middle, and there were two soldiers at their side. And this little kid starts asking these crazy questions. They take you past, take off your glasses, put on your glasses, this and that. They would drive you crazy. They would interrogate you. With two soldiers, they looked at you like they're going to who knows what. Then they took, people got scared. So they took away the soldiers. And they had all different dekuvas. Now, the modern world, they got rid of them altogether. They have a kiosk. You know what I'm talking about? You come to Eretz Yisrael, you take your passport, you swipe it, you go, you have to figure out how to use the kiosk. They used to have their people helping you. Now they don't have people helping you anymore. You have to figure out yourself. They did everything, now it's automated. It lost the personal touch. You lost the touch, the whole personal touch. You come to Eretz Yisrael, the whole hanoch is they harass you, right? They ask you all the questions. They interrogate you. There's no more personal touch. Chaval. Okay, you should have a nice person. Welcome to Israel. You lost this. A woman comes to the Beis HaMikdash, I need atonement. What would you like? Have a robot? AI? You have a robot. Oh, you come to the Mikdash. Before you come, register online. When you come there, automatically they know who you are, face recognition. The animal is waiting. They have automated, automated parking. There's a moving floor, and the moving floor has brought the animal to you. And a Kohen shows up, doesn't even look at you. Everything is automated, AI. AI. Everything is online, tickets, credit, v'chulu, v'chulu. You go through the process. Is that how it works? Chas v'shalom. Doesn't seem like that. But yet, in this pasuk, we differentiate between the Ashira and the Aniya. The Ashira, it doesn't say v'chiper ha-koyen oleha. V'chiper oleha. It's an automated process, almost. It doesn't say, obviously not. But when it comes to the Aniya, the Torah goes out of its way and says, you better enhance her experience by giving her a personal, what would you call it? A chaperone. The Torah is demanding...
Personal concierge.
The Torah is demanding that this be done delicately with a personal touch. V'chiper oleh. Why? Because she's poor. The rich people, they're very busy. They're busy with their money. They're busy with their family. And if that's not enough, there are plenty of collectors out there that want their money and will you know what, you know, and come to them, oh, you're the greatest person. The rich people are very, very busy with people coming to befriend them and to be busy.
And we see the opposite now. The rich person walks into a store.
No, exactly.
And the poor one,
no, they're busy. They don't need.
If you got a good room, come quick.
The rich and famous, the rich and famous don't need anything. They don't need the personal touch. The Torah here is going out of its way to warn you. When it comes to the poor, v'chiper ha-koyein olah. Be sensitive. They're embarrassed. All of their friends who are coming to bring korbanos, they bring animals. They're coming with a bird. Be sensitive to their shame. Be sensitive to their matzav in life. Make sure they feel appreciated and they feel that their atonement of what they're bringing should have the same chashivas by Kodesh Baruch Hu in a very sly way. It's one word which makes all the difference. V'chiper oleha ha-koyhein v'toheira. Okay, another short vart. Before we go to something I want to dwell on a little bit more, but one short vart. This is a real knockout vart, not my vart. Maybe we can transmogrify just a little bit to be kind of it with Gezel and Shinui. Shinui. And that is, it says over here, a person has an Negat Tzara, so we know there's a process of waiting 2 weeks. If the Nega does not spread, the Kohen looks at the Nega, he says 1 week, and then he comes back after 1 week, and guess what? The Nega did not spread, okay? Nothing happened. So when the Torah tells us, so it says, okay, you know what, if nothing happened, so put him away for another week. Lock the guy up for another week if nothing happens on the second week. Oivasar, let's see over here, Yerivar Vinechia, V'hiskiru ha-kohen shevasim, V'hiskiru ha-kohen b'yom ha-shvi'i. Okay? And let's say nothing happens. So the Pasuk says, I can't find the Pasuk, but it says, V'hinei loy posa ha-nega. He's locked up for 1 week. Nothing happens. He comes back. And V'ro'ohu ha-kohen b'yom ha-shvi'i. And guess, V'hinei. Hanega omad be'enav. The nega did not change. The nega did not move. Question. Why does the Torah say the word vihine? The Irakoin bayom hashvi, viha nega omad be'enav. Why does the Torah add the word vihine? If you study Chumash, you will notice the word vihine is only used and always used consistently when there is something that is thoroughly unexpected. Like Yaakov and Leah, the classic example. Yaakov, he marries Rachel. He works 7 years for Rachel. He gets married. Vihine Leah. Whoa, how did this happen? And you go through the whole Chumash. Every time it says the word Vihine, it is the unexpected. Why is it so unexpected? You go to a dermatologist. You come back again and again. Bill the insurance. At least 10 visits. At least 10 visits, renew the resolution, you maximize the profits. What is, when it comes to skin disease, someone once told me it's the best thing. it's the best form of medicine, because the progress is measured in months, in years, and that way you can keep on building and building and building. Okay, progress is very slow when it comes to a skin disease. Okay, dermatologists, it's a very slow process. Those things don't happen very quickly. So what's the vihine? Terry says, no, this is a spiritual disease. There's no, my Rebbe of Chaim always used to say, there's no such thing as a parva yid. There's no such thing when you're Jewish being parif. It's either you're going up or you're going down. There's no going sideways. It's not like the market. There's no such, you're either in ruchnius, today are you a bigger Yirei Shemayim or are you a lesser Yirei? There's no such thing in the world of ruchnius as remaining the same. Every day, every matzav, you're either growing or you're falling. So a person gets a nega, that's a wake-up call. The Ribbono Shel Olam has a big complaint. You're not doing something right. You're not doing something right either, and therefore you either shape up or ship out. The fact that a whole week can go by and the nega, omad be'enof, loifaso ha-nega ba'or, and there's no simon of a white here, a yellow here. Are you talking such a thing? There's no such thing as a parva yid. Either you're growing or you're falling. How could you be the same person a week later where it's the same matzif? So the Torah says, Enochinami, vihine, this is unexpected. This is bizarre, and this is something which defies logic, defies the world of reality of Ruchnis, vihine hanega. And indeed, okay, this has to be developed a little bit better. Okay, when it comes to the nega of the Arbosar, you do talk of something very different there. In the second week, it says, vihine loy fasa nega, v'lohoyt sabo seret sahoyv, v'hiskaloch. There's something that is talking, something that you do different. On the other side, you have to analyze that. If a whole week goes by and you did not, if you go down, okay, that's acceptable to go down. To go up, to become tar, that's wonderful. But to remain the same, that itself becomes a new disease. The second week, and okay, there's the hiskaloch, the big gimel, there's a big gimel, the hiskaloch. But that's only by the nega of the or bosar. I'm sorry, the Nigi HaRoish and HaZokon. You don't have that by the others, but there's also other differences by those as well. The pshat is, if we like to think on a very simple level, that if the Nega remains consistent, the it doesn't change, okay, more of the same. No. If the Nega has not budged in 1 week, you now have a new Nega. There's a new problem you have. It's not just, okay, status quo. Everything, you know, business as usual. If nothing has changed in the next week, that means in addition to the nega that you have until now, you got another problem. You're dead. You are not moving. There is no pulse. Either you go up or you go down. If the nega has not gone up or gone down, it's not just, okay, just, you know, more time. No, we got now a new problem here. And a whole new issue is a person that is stagnated. He's not alive. He's not going up. He's not going down. And indeed, when you go and you study all the laws, the intricate laws of Negaim, you will see that in the second week, we introduce a totally new element. And that new element that we introduce in the second week is in response to a new problem that has come about, a person that does not know how to take Musar and is not growing or even falling, because that's naturally, you go up, you go down. Okay, hopefully, last vart, not let's see, the last vart. This vart, to me, is very chaviv. Let's see what you say. We lay in this week a very rare haftorah. It's very rare to lay in this haftorah. Naaman. What is the story of Naaman? You can sum up the whole story, mamash, in a few words. There was a guy, a Gentile, who had tsaras, and he had a maid who was a hostage, a captive.
Jewish
Jewish girl, and she's recommended. Why don't you go to the Navi? Go to the Prophet. The Prophet will solve your problems. And Elisha, so he went to the Prophet, and he told him, go to the Yarden, and he went dip in the Yarden 7 times. He went to the Yarden, he was healed. That's the whole story.
That's it, forget about it.
Oh, so all the interesting parts of the story are not of the story, all the details. You normally have an amazing story. So what's amazing is the story. The details, all right, you know. Here, the story is very bland. Yeah. What happened? A person has saras. He goes to a prophet. The prophet tells him, go into the Yarden. He comes out of the Yarden. His basar returned to that's the whole story, in a nutshell. There's nothing more to say. But what makes the Haftarah so interesting is every single little part of the story is filled with these incredible yesodos. It's a very interesting concept, is where what's important about the story is not the story. The story is like any other story. An average Joe, you know, a story. Here, the what's interesting about the Haftarah is the devil is in the details. Now, one of the details is this something which to me was, when I first learned this, very bizarre. After Naaman immerses in the Yarden and is healed, is cured from his saras, after Naaman is cured from his saras, Naaman, he says to Elisha, he asks him permission. He says, I'm amazed. I'm now, I can't believe I'm healed. I now know that the only God that exists is the God of the Jews. He makes these very beautiful declarations. Okay, fine. And then at the end, he hears something very bizarre. When I'm going to go back to the king, I'm going to have to bow down by the Avodah Zarah. I'm going to do it without Kavanah. And he makes a request. Can I ask you, Elisha, permission? I want to go take earth. Bring in a bulldozer, bring in some type of a machine. I want to collect the earth from Eretz Yisrael, a clump of earth, and transport it back to Aram. And the earth, I'm going to make into a mizbeach, so that when I offer it from now on, I'm abandoning all of the gods, all the Avodah Zarah. I'm only going to worship Hashem. When I worship Hashem, I want to worship Hashem upon a mizbeach that is made from the earth of Eretz Yisrael. Very strange, right? I mean, who would do that? If you want to go offer, it doesn't make a difference. What kind of? Where do you have a halacha that the earth has to be from Eretz Yisrael? So would you do it? No, I don't want to take the earth, the holy earth of Eretz Yisrael, without your permission. So please give me permission to take with me earth, so that I can use this earth to build the Mizbeach, and when I offer sacrifices to Hashem, it will be on the Mizbeach that is built with the earth of Eretz Yisrael. So right away... Not the Yarden. Taking earth. He didn't take earth from the Yarden. Look at the Haftarah. The Haftarah of Parshas Tazria. Vayomer the end. Pasuk Yitzhak. Vayomer Naaman. Volo, you don't want to take my gift. Okay, that word volo is going back on the previous section. He writes it. Yutano le'avdecha maso, a burden of tzemed pirodim, the amount that a team of oxen can carry, adomo of earth of Eretz Yisrael. Kilo yase oid avdecha oilo vozevach leelohim acherim ki'im lahashem. I'm going back to Aram. I want to build a mizbeach. I'm not going to offer sacrifices to the gods, to any Avodah Zarah. I'm only going to offer it to Hashem. And I want to offer it to Hashem upon an altar that is built from the earth of Eretz Yisrael. Look at the Mefarshim on this pasuk. I want to take earth from Eretz Yisrael and bring it back to my land and make a mizbeach. And since when is there such a thing? You know, it's interesting. The mizbeach in the Mishkan, the mizbeach and the Choishes was a hollow mizbeach. And Rashi says when they moved, wherever they arrived, they filled it up with earth. It was lightweight. It was just a shell. And as they traveled the 48 masos in the Midbar, they filled up the Mizbech with earth. And when they moved, they emptied the earth. So does it say anywhere in the Torah and Chazal that they bedavka filled it up with the earth of Har Sinai? The first Mizbeach, the Mishkan, was erected at Har Sinai. That was the first location where they built the Mokam HaTorah. Torah. They built it with... So are you going to go tell me that all the Masois would bring, they brought with them the earth of Har Sinai? Does it say that anywhere? The Pashup Shad is, when they left Har Sinai, they left the earth by Har Sinai. When they arrived in a new location, the Masois, they took the local earth and they filled up the Mizbeach to make a Mizbeach. Does it say anywhere, Bedavka, when the Gilui Shekhinah came on Har Sinai, so we Bedavka want to go take the earth of Har Sinai with us wherever we travel, and when we set up the Mizbeach, we're going to fill up the Mizbeach from the earth of Har Sinai? Maybe. Maybe you learn from this pasuk over here. There's such a thing. There's something to it. Maybe there is something to it. Chveis nisht. It says by the soita, the coin will take from the offer of the. It says that the earth that you take for the soita is from the Mishkan from that location. I don't know, but I'm just trying to bring out the point that he made a request that to us is a little bizarre. When you serve Hashem, what difference does it make? You serve Hashem, you want your goy. You're going to do, I'm not telling you, goy, you want to go bring sacrifices to Hashem. Chveis, you're allowed to, now you're asking me permission, you're doing whatever you want anyway. You want this strange thing? The Torah has to, they have to go tell us this? The Navi has to tell us this? We're going to lane this in the Haftorah. We're going to lane this. Do me a toiva. Let me bring a team of oxen, which can hold a massive amount of weight, okay? A team of oxen, and we're going to load them up with earth of Eretz Yisrael, so when I go back to my land, I can go have a place to Eretz Yisrael, mini Eretz Yisrael in Aram, okay? We're all for Sarah. My high! What's going on over here? So I want to suggest you something very simple. The parasha of Tzaras begins with the word Adam. Adam That's how the parasha, the opening line of all of the Negei Tzaras, the opening line of everything, the Hakdama, is, how does it all begin? It all begins, let me find the pasuk over here, Vayidaber Hashem El Moshe V'El Aharon Lemar. Adam, man, Ki Yihyeh V'Oiroi V'Or B'Saro Se'ei Sapachas. Okay, what do you do? Vihuva, this Adam shall be presented. You pick him up. You pick him up. They have a special SWAT team that comes in hazmat, what's it called? In their hazmat costumes, certainly be contaminated from the leprosy. And they pick him up, okay, like out of a movie, okay, a special van, a special truck comes, and a whole team of these guys from a horror movie. Like COVID, and they pick him up and they put him in the truck and they bring him to the Kohen. Vihuva, you're coming with us. Vihuva, El Aharon HaKohen, Oy El Achad Mibonav HaKohanim. We're bringing an Adam. Remember, this parsha, we have a lot of terms. We have a Zohar Nekeva, Bein or Bas. We have Bosar is the name of a person. We have Ish or Isha, a lot of different ways to describe human beings in this week's parasha. A lot of different ways, a unique flavor for each type of nega. Here is the Hakdama, Adam. What does the word Adam mean? Why is man called Adam? Ofar min ha'adama. It reflects where we have come from. We have come from the earth. And when this earth, from which we have come from, is defective. There's a negat saras in the ofar minho adama. We got a problem. This adama has to be transported from your location to the holiest location, to the kohen. V'huva el Aharon. Where does he hang out, Aharon HaKohen? He hangs out in the Mishkan. He hangs out in the Makom of the Hashuras HaShchina. Naaman had Tzaras. Naaman was suggested that he pick himself up and go present himself to Elisha, to the holy man. It was suggested by a young girl. We don't know what happened to that young girl. She was a hostage. We don't know what happened to her. Very strange. Yeah. She was a hostage, and she gives him good advice. And what happened to this girl? Was she ever released from her captivity? She was a hostage. She gives him good advice. The good advice goes from her, from the girl, to the mother. To the mistress. And then it goes, ends up by the melech, the king of Aram. And the king of Aram says, you know, Naaman, it's a good idea. Go, I'll pay for it. I'll send you first class, and I'll give you a lot of money, a big gift. He'll give a big gift to the prophet. And he goes, he's presented the whole cycle. He goes, he travels, he goes. And then he gets good advice. And he didn't want to listen, but he listens. He goes into the Yarden. And now is the point I want to make. Naaman says, you know something? I want to suggest this is the reason why we learn this as the Haftarah. The Haftarah is always a complement. It's not more of the same. It is a complement to the Parsha. I want to reciprocate. What do I mean I want to reciprocate? Who am I? I fit into the Torah. I'm an Adam. And the Adam is defective. When the Adam is defective, the Adam is brought to the holy place. In reciprocation, I now want to take the Adama and bring it to holy Adama and bring it back home. There is a parallel. Adam is Adama. Ofar minhu Adama. When the Adama is defective, the Adama goes to the holy place. And now when you've been purified so that this should never happen again, you take the Adama that is holy and you bring it to you. You go to the Kohen, you go to the experience of the Tahara, take that Adama and now bring it. Huva, the Adama of Aaron shall now be Huva to the Ish, to where you came from. I make believe in Tel Aviv. And in Tel Aviv, there's a problem. I became a Mitzora. So the Adama, I'm an Adama, I represent Tel Aviv. I'm the Adama min ha'ofar of Tel Aviv. So the Adama of Tel Aviv is now going to go for a repair job. It's going to go to the holy place, the Beis HaMikdash, with the place of the Kohanim. In this case, it was Elisha. And now when the repair is done, how do I make sure that this never happens again? You take from the Naaman was Mechadesh. You take from the Adama of Yerushalayim, you bring in a big truck, 18-wheeler, tzemed bakar, and you load up with earth, the Adama. Why Adama? Because I'm also Adama. My Adama is no good. It had to be brought for repair. So now when it's over, I take from the Adama, the holy place, and I bring it to me. And I dwell upon it. I worship Hashem on it. What is the message? I have to take from this holiness of this Mokoim back home with me and use it as a reminder or as a tool to spiritualize myself so that this never happens. There is the Haftarah is teaching you the aftermath. It's teaching you the follow-up. What is the follow-up? Over here we have the parasha, and Adam has Saras. He goes to the Kohen, he's Tomei, he has all of his problems. He has his Tomei. And what is the aftermath? What is the Haftarah? You should know. Eventually you'll become Tahar. That's next week's parasha. Okay, Zois HaTorah eventually, but the next week's parasha is just telling you about the Korbanos you bring. But this week's parasha is telling you the moral, the spiritual, is telling you the spiritual response to what you do. And what their spiritual response is to do just the opposite. If the problem is the Adama is being brought to Eretz Yisrael, now the Adama of Eretz Yisrael is being brought back home. It's the same word. It's the same Adama. Have a wonderful Shabbos. I'm